Hey everyone, it's Melanie Johnson here. So glad to have you for another great podcast. We're going to learn so much today. I'm one of the owners and founders of Elite Online Publishing, along with my business partner, Jen Foster. Hi, Jen.
Hey everyone, how's it going today?
Well, I'm having a really great day and a great week, and we have someone really interesting today. You know, my family is a family of athletes. I don't know if a lot of you know that, but I come from a family of wrestlers that doesn't have much to do with the other sport I'm talking about, but that's toughness, right? When you have that toughness and grit, wrestling is one of the toughest sports, in my opinion, out there. Well, we have an Ironman with us today, super successful Ironman. And just learning what he learned through Ironman and applied it to business, but also the point of we all need help in business, whether it's for an athlete, you need a coach, right? When you're in business, you need an advisor and you need to have a team behind you. So many of us as entrepreneurs, we feel like we're doing it ourselves. And that's when we get lost in the weeds. So we really want to bring Stephen Pifnik on because he is really excellent at talking about having an advisor, what you should be using an advisor for. So stay tuned. We've got a lot to unpack today. Welcome, Stephen. Thanks for coming to our show today. And congratulations Thanks, Melanie. On your book too.
Yeah, thank you for having me. And yeah, thank you. That was an incredibly fun project. And I'm glad it's out.
Awesome. Well, Stephen, tell us a little bit how you got into working out and deciding I want to do an Ironman.
Sure. So, I mean, I consider this my midlife crisis. When I was turning 40, I realized that I had lost the generic lottery between my parents and my grandparents. They, everything, you name it, they had it, you know, high blood pressure, diabetes, cancer, strokes. And I felt that, you know, all of this stuff was in me is going to rear its ugly head in some way, shape or form in the future. And I decided to turn 40 in the best shape of my life. And I had picked triathlon as the vehicle to get me healthy. I just found out that somebody at work did a triathlon. I was totally ignorant about it. I thought it was an elite Olympic sport. I'm like, how does a mere mortal, one of my employees, do a triathlon? And when I found out more about it, I went down that journey and then found out about Ironman, and the rest is history.
So what do you felt like you learned from the Ironman experience that you applied to your business?
Sure. So I think I came up with the term entrepreneurship is an endurance sport. The more I got into my endurance sports journey, whether it was triathlon, ultramarathons, or mountaineering, I found that there's a lot of similarities. All the planning, perseverance, execution, pivots, setbacks, stamina that's required. So the stronger I got in one, the stronger I was becoming in another. And there's just so many similarities between the two, and they fed on one another for me.
I really like that. Yeah, I've done a mini triathlon and I know what goes into, you know, preparing. Even just the swim was the one that I needed work on. So I had to practice for open water swim because I just normally do pools. So I was definitely had to learn that. But I love that you went through how business models preparing for a triathlon or for the Ironman with all of those things. And so let's talk about planning. What did you do to really plan and get into it?
Yeah, so I definitely took a slow but steady approach. You know, a lot of people find out, I've learned that, you know, when I do Ironman races, the race organizers, they ask the crowd who here is doing their first triathlon ever. And I'm amazed that several people raise their hands that they start their triathlon journey with something as complicated and long and hard as an Ironman. So my planning process took close to 24 months. I learned about triathlon. Like you said, I did the baby one first, a sprint distance one. I got comfortable with that distance. Then I moved on to a half marathon. Then I moved on to a half Ironman. Then I moved on to a full marathon. And only then did I feel comfortable enough to actually sign up for a full-blown Ironman. So my planning process took, like I said, close to 24 months before I crossed that first finish line.
Awesome. Tell us, for those who don't know, like this is the first time they've heard of an Ironman, how many miles is the run? How many miles is the swim? How many miles is the bike?
Sure. So an Ironman is a one-day triathlon, and it starts off with a 2.4-mile swim, followed by a 112-mile bike race, and then a full marathon, 26.2-mile run. And you have a 17-hour cutoff to complete those three.
Wow. So swim, bike, run. Okay.
Yeah. Always swim, bike, run. And then there's longer. I mean, I did something last weekend, which was ridiculously crazy. It's called Ultraman. It's a 3-day triathlon. The first day is a 6.2 mile swim, followed by a 90 mile bike. The second day is a 170 mile bike, and the third day is a 52.4 mile run.
Wow.
So there's no limit to these extreme endurance sports. There's always some organizer coming up with something longer and harder.
I imagine you got to have like some Advil and some Biofreeze after you get done with one of those long.
Oh, it's a very painful endeavor. There's a lot of planning and preparation that goes into that one.
Oh my gosh. Well, let's kind of switch our gears towards business a little
Sure.
bit. I think as an entrepreneur, whether you're starting out or you're thinking about selling or you're in the middle of growth, talk about like you have in here about your banking relationships, selecting your accounting, your legal firms, and getting that team together. What do you look for? And give us some tips about that.
I mean, the biggest thing to look for is really to surround yourself with folks that have been there and done that. Whether you're, like you mentioned, whether you're in a growth phase or whether you're in a getting preparation for, selling phase, you want to make sure that you have a team around you that has been there and has actually operated at different levels. For instance, if you're in the process of growing your company, and I'll just pick a number, you're at a $20 million level and you want to continue to grow, you should really look for a head of sales that's worked for at least a 40, if not $50 million company. So he or she can take a look at your organization and really progress it to the next level. Versus, the mistake I made and a lot of entrepreneurs make, they stick with their team, which is most entrepreneurs are incredibly loyal, which is great. And they're so thankful for the team that got them to where they are. But unfortunately, in some cases, that same team can't continue to scale. So it's really necessary to surround yourself with folks that have operated at whatever level you want to be at, not at the level that you're at today. So similarly, when you're going through a sales process, and you want to make sure that you surround yourself with a team, both, legal, accounting, investment bankers, advisors that do this for a living. It's a very complicated process. There's a ton of roadblocks that you're going to come across, and you want to make sure that you have people that you're working with that know how to get around these roadblocks.
I like that, where it's really evaluating the team that you're working with right now, and are they going to get you to your big goal?
Exactly.
How would you, when in your book it talks about how you set the big goals and then set up the plans to achieve them, what kind of like micro tasks can you do to achieve those big goals?
Sure. I mean, I'm a big believer in like dividing up big goals into smaller ones. For instance, like when I learned about this thing called Ironman, my bigger goal within that realm was to get to the world championship. Well, how does one get to the Ironman World Championship in Kona, Hawaii? For me, that meant since I wasn't a necessarily fast athlete. I have a ton of endurance and I can race all day, but I'm not necessarily fast. That means I won't qualify by being at the top of my age group. The other path that they have for the world championship is what I call their frequent flyer program. So as long as you race 12 full distance races, you get a lottery ticket to potentially race with the fastest in the world. So in that case, I broke up this huge goal of getting to the world championship by having to race, in 12 other venues around the world. Similarly, in the business world, right? If you are setting a specific sales objective, you need to, break that down into smaller granular pieces. If you need to grow, let's say by if your growth plan calls for $5 million in growth for the following year, well, what does that actually mean? How many customers does 5 million represent? If that represents, five more customers, okay, how am I going to get five? In order to get five, I've got to probably put 15, if not 25, into my pipeline. Well, how am I going to get 25 into my pipeline? Then I got to do marketing activities that are going to result in that sort of, pipeline growth. So breaking down, big audacious goals into smaller chunks makes them a lot more achievable.
And I think I like that too. It's like breaking that down. It's so many times it's like, well, I want to sell $20 million worth, but how many products do you have to sell that's in your suite to get to the 20 million, and how many leads
Exactly.
you need to get into it? Also, you touch on the succession plan. Jen and I have talked about this with our business. I have a son who's in a business that has a couple partners and they're young, but I'm thinking, well, what if something happened to one of you? Or what's going to happen if you want to sell the company? How do you create that plan and make it viable? Even I had a cousin who her spouse died, who was one a part owner of a company, and she inherited his part of the company as a buyout. And like my son said, no, I don't think we're going to do that because none of us are married. Well, one of you just had a child with somebody. So, you got to start thinking in a broader spectrum. So kind of walk
Sure.
us through what we should be thinking about and how to do it.
Yeah, it's a lot easier said than done, especially when it comes to the founder succession planning. I mean, for others, it's a little easier, right? You want to make sure that you've got a deep bench of folks. So for every executive that you have or senior leader that you have, you want to make sure that you have somebody on his or her team that is able, to step into their shoes in the unfortunate event that they leave or they need to leave, et cetera. But when it comes to the actual founder themselves, that's when it becomes a little bit more difficult, but it's definitely doable. A lot of founders, myself included, think they're not replaceable, right? It's only this is my baby. I got this. I invented it. I got it to where it is today. Only I can take it forward. Well, you know what? After I started some of the succession planning for my executive team, I looked in the mirror and I said, you know what? It's possible to replace you as well, meaning me. And I did just that. At first, I wasn't 100% comfortable that I was going to bring on a CEO to replace me. I brought on somebody who was a CEO candidate, but I hired him as a COO. And I told myself that I would give him 6 months to a year to see if I liked and trusted him and to see if he was really the right person to take on my job. Well, that entire effort didn't have to take 6 months. It took 2 months. And I said, this is the perfect find. Let me promote myself to executive chairman and promote my COO to CEO to take on the daily leadership responsibilities.
I like that, the trial basis of replacing
Yes.
yourself. Yeah, I think that's something hard for me to step out of my own way and actually let someone do the work that I'm doing. That's something I've struggled with
Yeah,
multiple
it's definitely not
times
easy,
in my
but it's definitely doable.
So tell us about buyouts too and stock options.
Sure. So on a stock, I'm a big believer in, sharing the wealth, right? So from the very, very early days of my company, we had bonus plans in place. So when the company did well, everybody did well. When the company did super well, there were times where we paid double bonuses. Nobody was even expecting it, but we made those payments. When the company didn't do well, then obviously those payments didn't occur and nobody liked it, but they understood. As we continued to scale, stock options became unnecessary, just another form of sharing the wealth and really making sure that everybody benefits when the founders and majority shareholders of the company benefits. So I was a big believer in it, and until like the last 2 years or so, like every employee that joined got stock options in various levels. And it just got to a point where it doesn't fully scale. Once you get to a certain point, you can't give everybody stock options. But still, the vast majority of the company was in possession of them, so that when I did sell, everybody benefited and got a payment.
And I imagine that helps with the culture too, when they feel like they're vested in the company. And culture is such a hot topic today of having a highly productive, engaged culture where a lot of people, younger people, are just like, I'm just pushing the pencil across the line. So how do you develop that culture, especially when people are working remote now? There's just a lot of more moving parts than there used to be. The dynamic has changed.
Yeah, it's definitely harder than it used to be. Even we became a remote company before remote was a thing. Unfortunately, 9/11 forced us to become a remote company because our office at the time was in downtown Manhattan and we couldn't get into the office. So we became a remote company overnight due to those circumstances. And then we continued to operate as a remote company after that. We went above and beyond to make sure that we built personal relationships and got together as a company and as teams as often as possible. Because we didn't have the added expense of real estate, we just basically used that budget to have get-togethers, whether it be team meetings, regional events, to a company-wide holiday party. Up until the 2 final years of the company where it became cost prohibitive, we had a company all holiday party every single year where we invited the employee and his or her, plus one, significant other to come. And we went to great places. We went to Vegas a couple of times. We went to South Beach in Miami. We went to the Florida Keys. We went to New Orleans. We just made sure to have a really, celebrate each other's relationships. And that goes a long way into building a cohesive culture.
Yeah, that's great that you could pivot so easily when, I mean, you kind of were forced to with 9/11, but I think that shows what kind of a leader company that you had. and that you are, because you could pivot and make that a remote company overnight. I mean, you had to, but you still kept it going and kept things working. So I think that's really awesome and important that to have your team meetings and team collaboration and events to get to know each other on a personal level.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even these types of, Zoom meetings or, Skype meetings, it can't be, business only 100% of the time. We did it like during COVID as a perfect example. We couldn't have those get-togethers that we normally had. So during COVID, we just had parties, like just social events online, and everybody knew that from, 12 to 1 on a Friday, if you wanted to, you can just join and just shoot the breeze with everybody else. And those events went a long way.
Love that. Well, this has been so helpful. I took a bunch of notes from the interview. So tell us where people can find you, Stephen.
Yeah, best way to find me is on my website, stephenpivnik.com. That has a link to all of my social handles, to the book, and to my blog. So stephenpivnik.com is the best way to find me.
Awesome. Well, we'll put that URL up in the show notes. That's Stephen Pivnik, PIVNIK.com. And you can get the book Built to Finish. Awesome.
Thanks for coming, everybody. We hope you enjoyed this. Remember to like and share and leave us a review. We would love to hear from you and share it with other people. And if you're looking to write a book, remember to reach out to us at eliteonlinepublishing.com. We guarantee you'll be a number one bestseller. Check us out next time. We'll see you soon. Bye-bye. Have a great week, everyone.
Thanks
Bye.
all. Bye-bye.
Hey, are you looking to increase your revenue, build credibility, and elevate your brand? This podcast is brought to you by Elite Online Publishing, an innovative publishing and full spectrum marketing company. They will publish and market your book to make it a number one bestseller. Becoming an author is the best way to market your business. So contact them at eliteonlinepublishing.com today. All of their authors become number one bestsellers.